35. Jeff felt the ground beneath his feet threatening to give way. He saw the concerned faces of the others, Philip, Gary, and Tyler. Even Jimmy seemed worried. Jeff looked down. His heels and the balls of his feet were on the ground, but his toes hung out in midair over a sickening drop. He felt the ground shuddering and shifting under his weight. He looked back to his friends. They were farther away now. Jeff knew that they weren't moving. He was, and soon he would pick up quite a bit of speed.
"I can't fly," he thought, "and I'm not invulnerable. I think this is it. At least I can go out with some class."
Jeff felt the ground give way beneath him, and without consulting his brain, his mouth blurted out, "Crud!" Jeff was falling. The rock on which he had stood caught on a fissure in the cliff face, pivoted, and threw Jeff out into the clear, where he had a straight fall all the way down to the canyon floor. His mind was clogged with panic. Time seemed to slow to a crawl. Jeff was so fascinated by the sight of his own upcoming demise that he didn't even hear Roy's voice at first.
"Kid," Roy said. "Kid, you with me?"
Jeff said,
"What?"
His own voice sounded deep and slow to his ears, but Roy's voice sounded normal.
"Listen up, kid. We've slowed down time. Well, actually, we sped you up. We overclocked your brain as much as we dare. We got the trick from that doctor they have in Atlantis."
Jeff's mind felt as fast as ever, but his voice droned,
"Why?"
"We're gonna get you out of this. Now we need you to hold still."
"I'm falling."
"Yeah, I know. You can't help that, but stop flapping your arms around."
"You'd flap too."
"Just cut it out,"
Roy snapped. Jeff froze as best he could under the circumstances.
"Okay," Roy said. "That's good. Hold it just like that."
Jeff thought,
"And of course now my nose itches. Man, the ground's still coming up really fast, isn't it? Even slowed down to this pace, I wouldn't survive the impact. Actually, he said time wasn't slower, just my brain is sped up, so I'm still falling at the same speed, and I'll hit with just as much force. I'm just getting more time to experience it. Fantastic."
Jeff heard a female voice say,
"Okay, we've scanned him. Rendering the simulation now."
Way down near the canyon floor, Jeff saw a light source. He squinted into the wind. It was Todd's webcam window.
"He's all lined up to watch me go splat," Jeff thought. "Bastard's got a front row seat."
The female voice said,
"Ready."
"Okay," Roy said. "Keep still just a second or two more. We need to time this right."
The ground was getting very close now. It took all of Jeff's willpower to keep from putting his arms out in front of himself. Not that it would have helped. Roy said,
"Now."
There was a flash, and Jeff was awash in a sea of blinding light and bright colors. Time accelerated back to normal. Jeff's ears were filled with the rushing sound of wind. His eyes adjusted. He saw that it was a bright, sunny day, and he was many hundreds of feet above the ground. Green trees and rolling hills spread out beneath him. Directly below, he saw a town and recognized it as Ledchurch. This was all an improvement, but he was still falling. As if on cue, Roy's voice said,
"You have your powers back. You can start flying anytime you like."
Jeff stopped himself, then hung suspended in the sky, catching his breath.
"Welcome back," Roy said.
Jeff thought he could hear the traces of a smile in Roy's voice.
"We're all over at Phillip's shop. Come by when you're ready to join us."
Jeff found a surprisingly large group of people waiting for him in the street in front of the shop. He'd expected Roy, and it made sense for Philip, Tyler, and Gary to be there. He was happy to see Martin and Gwen as well, although he didn't know how they were involved in all this. What really surprised him was that the Brits were there. But upon seeing them, he suddenly recognized the female voice that had been assisting Roy was probably one of theirs. Jeff came to a landing and was greeted a bit more enthusiastically than he was prepared for. Philip asked,
"So, what did you think of New Zealand?"
"Is that where we were?"
Jeff asked. Philip said,
"Turns out."
"Yeah," Jeff said. "What I saw of it, I didn't like so much."
As they all filed through Philip's shop and upstairs to the rec room, Jeff said to Roy,
"Thanks for saving me, but why didn't you just yank me out of there?"
"We couldn't let Todd see that we'd rescued you," Roy explained. "We had to switch you with a copy."
"A copy?" Jeff asked. "Of me? We can copy people?"
"Kinda. It was a computer-generated automaton.
It's a trick we picked up from Todd's hard drive."
"I don't know why I was worried," Jeff said, chuckling. "We're time travelers. I should have known you all would find a way to save me."
"Not necessarily," Britt the Elder said. "If we hadn't been told the precise time and place that you'd been killed, we wouldn't have been able to intervene. We can't change an event we don't know about. If Todd had managed to kill you all without anybody knowing when and where, we would all be dead. It's something you all should keep in mind."
"But you don't have to keep it in mind?"
Britt the Younger asked.
"The fact that I'm still here proves that I did keep it in mind, and that you did too, I suppose. Well done, dear."
Jeff looked around. The room looked much as he remembered it, except there were two large laptops on the coffee table with a microphone headset wired up and ready for use. He settled down in one of Philip's lounge chairs. He sighed contentedly, then looked up at everyone else. None of them were sitting. They all stood in front of him, smiling down, unnervingly happy to see him. Looking at them now, he saw that Philip, Tyler, Gary, and Martin were all wearing brand new robes and hats. The colors were slightly different. The designs were fancier. The silver sequins on Martin's robe were smaller and interspersed with what looked like rhinestones. Philip's robe now incorporated some patch of black fur. Even Roy's trench coat and modified fedora were different.
"How long have I been gone?" Jeff asked.
"About a month and a half,"
Roy said. Jeff said,
"You took your time."
"We wanted to do it right," Roy answered. "There were animations to plot. It had to look absolutely convincing."
Jeff thought for a second, then said,
"Fair enough. What'd I miss?"
Philip said,
"I broke my arm."
Martin said,
"Gwen has moved in with me."
Gary said,
"I have a robot foot."
He lifted his leg and displayed the gleaming chrome appendage starting just below his knee. The metal toes clacked together as he wiggled them for effect.
"Huh," Jeff said, "a robot foot. That's the third coolest possible cyborg body part."
"I know,"
Gary said. Gwen's expression soured. Martin leaned close and whispered,
"What?"
Gwen said,
"Third coolest robot body part. You boys."
Martin said,
"Yeah. Hand, eye, then foot."
"What's wrong with that?" Gwen frowned.
"Nothing," she said. "Never mind."
Gary continued,
"It's a false construct, of course, not a real robot part. But still, it seems real, and it has three different looks. This one, a dragon's claw, or a normal human foot. But I never use that one."
"Why would you?"
Jeff said.
"There's no reason to when you can have a robot foot,"
Gary agreed.
"I keep fake skulls around just so I can stomp on them."
Jeff said,
"Cool. Anything else happen?"
Martin said,
"Well, Jimmy's dead."
"No, he isn't,"
Philip added quickly. Jeff asked,
"How'd he die?"
Philip said,
"He didn't."
Martin answered,
"He took his own life."
Philip said,
"Nobody really believes that."
Gwen stepped in.
"He realized that we would never be able to truly forgive him, but we also couldn't let him run around free if we knew he was alive. So he made it look like he ended himself, but he may have just gone off to make a new life somewhere else."
"And we're just letting him go?"
Jeff asked. Philip said,
"We've looked at the file, and he appears to be dead. If he is still alive, we can't find him. Anyway, he was right. What he did was unforgivable, and we never would have trusted him again. But we have no concrete reason to believe he has, or had, any evil intent."
"I don't know," Jeff said. "I don't like the idea that he's still out there."
Martin said,
"Yeah, I agree. But most of us don't really like the idea that he isn't still out there either."
Look, Philip said, it doesn't matter. Jimmy didn't want to kill us, or else we'd be dead. He made it pretty clear that he doesn't want to spend any more time with us, and I know that none of us want to spend any more time with him. I'm confident that we'll never see Jimmy again.
Britt the Elder said,
yes,
which Philip found quite encouraging, until she added,
you are totally confident of that, right now.
Philip thought about what she might have meant by that, and deflated noticeably.
And now, Britt the Elder said, you're less confident.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of An Unwelcome Quest by Scott Meyer. Performed by Luke Daniels. Directed by Colleen Willits. Engineered by Patrick Murdoch. Performance copyright 2014 by Brilliance Audio, all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225. Or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.